number of our regular guests here who come a number of times during the course of the year. Friend David Wolfe from Toronto, and he tells me that his brother Nachum and his wife are going to be here, who are members of my shul in Toronto, the Bnei Torah congregation, and he was also a student of mine in Nehru Yeshiva College of Toronto at 625 Fisher Avenue West. No longer exists anymore, the building doesn't, the yeshiva does. We're very happy to have Chava Fafler back after a period of illness, and Baruch Hashem, she looks well, she should be gesund. Okay? Who?
Mrs. Berlinger from West Hampstead. Has she been here before?
Oh, she's been around before. Sandy Berlinger, she's an old hand over here. And we have guests from Williamsburg, from ancient times. All right. Okay, so. Parashat Vayeshev, just a note of caution, an extremely important note of caution. We enter into Parashat Vayeshev, from Vayeshev until the end of Sefer Bereshit, we are walking in a minefield. A wrong step, a wrong turn, a wrong shot can be extremely dangerous. One cannot deal with the issue of Yosef and his brothers without the classical Mefarshim, without an understanding that what's taking place over here is the birth of a nation. In every birth there are labor pains. And these four pukim, the first step of labor pains of the Jewish people, are taking place. And those labor pains, what I call the first stage, is that we should end Sefer Bereshis with a family unit. As we've pointed out in the past, every other family in Sefer Bereshit is split, torn asunder, never to be put together again. Start with Cain and Hevel. Cain, of course, had the clearest and simplest way to deal with the problems of the family. Kills Cain. Oh, it's a problem. Hashem, Chum, and Yofes go off into all sorts of directions. Noach's family does not remain a family. When we get to Avraham, of course, Yishmael and Yitzhak are still not a family. If Yitzhak is smart, he will tell you clearly, Yishmael is not my partner for peace. It is Yitzhak and Yishmael. If anything, Yitzhak and Yishmael are moving further and further away from each other. The radicalization of Islam is a serious problem that will be with us for a long time, except that there's a Rabbein Shantel who's taking care of us. The next set of brothers, of course, are Yaakov and Esau. We don't have to talk about what happens to Yaakov and Esau throughout all of history. And nearly the last family in Sefer Bereshit, are the 12 children of Yaakov, who are, of course, torn asunder, ripped apart by the sale, in quotation marks, of Yosef, until that family rebuilds itself and becomes the great unit from which Klal Yisrael is going to be born. And they have to go through all of that. There's a tremendous amount that they're going to learn about themselves and the nature of brotherhood during the course of these painful parshiyot. But there is one family And it was the great, it was Yaakov Avinu who said, and that's what people do until today, we bless our children. Yisimcha Elokim, let God make you Ephraim and Menashe. Ephraim and Menashe are the only two brothers in all Sefer Bereishis that remained at peace forever. Ephraim and Menashe. Different than Yitzchak and Yishmael, Yaakov and Esau, Shem Chama Yofes, Kayin Vehevel, Yisimcha Elokim, Ephraim and Menashe. Alright. That having been said, okay, Ken has something to say back there.
What's extraordinary is that Menashe is the first, and he's not the firstborn, and there's no jealousy.
Okay. I assume he's adding, or that despite the fact that Yaakov places Ephraim before Menashe, the family unit remains one. Okay, very good, Ken. That's not really we're going to be dealing with all of this peripherally. I'm just saying because I see every so often all sorts of Groyser Chachumim writing all sorts of nagasha ridiculous shot in Yosef and his brothers, and we may deal with it in coming weeks. I'm not sure yet, you know. I never know what I'm going to talk about. I had a whole sheer whole day yesterday and last night it changed, you know. There's so much Torah so fast. So that's number one. We have to watch the be wary, be aware. Remember above everything, the 12 sons of Yaakov are Shiftei Kor, the divine 12 Shvatim. And then don't I want to hear any of these stories about this, that, in, that. If you have any doubts, you know, we'll straighten out. We did a lot of it last year. But today I want to go into something else. I want to deal with one positive. One positive. One positive. Three words. Watch. The brothers see Yosef coming for them. Father, Yaakov has sent Yosef to see how the brothers are doing. They're someplace out in Shechem. Okay? Yosef comes to Shechem, and it's with fear and trepidation that he goes, but he goes in order to fulfill the mitzvah of Kibbud Av, because he knows that his brothers dislike him. He comes to Shechem, he doesn't find his brothers. And then, it's so amazing, if you read the Pesukim carefully, he's wandering in a field outside Shechem. And a man approaches him. What are you looking for? And of course, his response, you have to remember this response forever. Et achai. I'm looking for my brothers. There's a beautiful Mordechai ben David Nigin and an Achai Anochi Mevakej. That's really the story of Yosef's life. He looks for his brothers, he's looking for brotherhood. That's really what he seeks. Et achai. Alright. Same. Achai Anochi Mevakej. And here it is. Now you have to understand the way the Ramban and other of them portion, there's a plan on the foot. Yaakov has sent Yosef, the Pasuk has said earlier, may Emek Chevron, from the valley of Chevron. So Rashi asked, but wait a minute, Chevron is not in a valley, Chevron is in a mountain. So Rashi says, may Emek Chevron, may Eitzor Amuko, from that deep council, the deep idea that comes and was revealed to Yeshene Chevron, those who sleep in Chevron, the others. God had made a treaty with Avraham Avinu, that your children shall be strangers in a land that's not theirs. They will serve. They will be enslaved for 400 years. And afterwards, they will emerge with great wealth. This process has to begin. And the process begins the moment that Yaakov tells Yosef, go. Go and see how your brothers are doing. What's happening over here is every step of the way, there's a hidden hand. There's a divine hand that is, I think, really taking everybody by the hand in order that this process should begin. Klal Yisrael had to go down to Mitzrayim. Instead of Yaakov Avinu being taken down to Mitzrayim in chains of metal, he's going to come down as the father of the viceroy of all of Egypt. How's all that going to be done? Well, there are a lot of steps in the process. First part of the process is Yosef is on his way to Shechem. Yes, he's going to come down to Egypt, and great things are going to happen to them. Terrible, difficult, painful, very painful. 22 years cut off from family, friends, everybody he knew, and for a number of those years he is a slave. Anyway, the process begins. And then, at the very first step in the process, Yosef gets to Shechem, and his brothers aren't there. So I can imagine what's going on in heaven. This process has to begin, but his brothers aren't there. Don't worry, the Rishon says, take it easy. A man appears in the field, and he asks Yosef, what are you looking for? In other words, what had to happen over here is a mid-course correction. We have to put the divine plan on track. And here is this mysterious man, Chazal say, it was a malach. The angel is there to direct him. Yosef, you have a mission, not an easy one. Off you go. I heard that your brothers went to Dothan, and he goes there and he finds him. Yes, Malka.
It was not said that the Mitzrayim, Pharaoh did it by his free choice.
He did it by his free choice. Okay, very good. Good. He finally makes his way toward his brothers. They see him from the distance, and they say, let us kill him, and we will cast him into Achar Borot, into one of the pits that are out there, and we will say, a wild animal devoured him. Then we will see my view, what's going to be with all the streams. Yishma Ruben heard by Atzilel Yodam, and he saved Yosef from their hands. Vayomer, he said, Lo nakenu nefesh, we are not going to strike him mortally, we're not going to kill him. Vayomer Alein, Ruben said, Al tishbuchu dam, don't spill blood, hashlicho otol akor hazeh, cast him into this pit, asher v'abibba, that's in the desert. Don't stand your hand against the mamah. And the pasuk testifies about Reuven that he said this laman hatzila tomi adam in order to save him from the hands lahashivo elaviv. He wants to bring Yosef back to his father. Okay. When Yosef came to his brothers, Yosef they stripped Yosef of his coat at Ketana, and Pasim Asher Lo, the many colored Ketana, they took him by Yashichu Oto Agora, and they cast him into the pit, Vahabore Engo Mai. The pit is empty, there is no water in the pit. We want to talk about this pit. Vahabore Engo Mai. There is no water. Okay? They're, of course, strange. Next passage, they sat down to eat and drink. They've cast their brother off into this pit. So here we begin. Number two. Number two is a Gemara from the Sechet Shabbat. And in that Gemara, in Masechet Shabbat, there are three Daf Gemara plunked down in the middle of the second paragraph, or the beginning of the second paragraph of Masechet Shabbat, and it is the Sugya of Chanukah. The famous Gemara of Mai Chanukah. What's Chanukah all about? And all of the halachas of Chanukah. Three black. And we will see that there is a relationship between Yosef, Parsha Vayeshev, Chanukah. I mean, we are relevant, we are staying up to date. The Gemara says the following. Amar Rav Kahana said, Dorash Rabbi Nosson Bar Minyumi Mishmeid Rabbi Tanchum. Rav Natan, the son of Minyumi, said in the name of Rabbi Tanchum, Ner Shal Chanukah Shehinicha Lamala Miyas Rama Psula. If one puts a Ner Chanukah, a Chanukah menorah, higher than 20 cubits, one has not fulfilled the mitzvah. 20 cubits is about 40 feet high. Now, it does not mean if you're living on the 10th floor in Diskin that anybody above face the second or third floor is not Yetzir Chanukah. No. You know, if you're lighting on the 10th floor, so the purpose of those candles is for the people in the house. It has to be where you are. In other words, if your the roof of your house is higher than 20 amma, or if you put it in the street higher than 20 amma, you're not using the mitzvah. Why? The Gemara explains, because the eye doesn't really see it. The eye doesn't grasp it fully. And the halacha of Ner Chanukah is people have to be able to see it. So if you put it higher than 20 amma, you have not fulfilled the mitzvah. Okay? Now, the Gemara of all things, and this is the beginning of a great deal of literature, there is a second statement by the same Rav Tanchum. A second statement, the same person who told us the halacha that Ner Chanukah that's higher than 20 amma, you have not fulfilled the mitzvah, tells us a second halacha. And the second halacha is, from Rav Kahana, again, Rav Kahana, Dorish Rabbi Natan bar Minyumi Nishmeid Rav Tanchum, Rav Nosson bar Minyumi expounded the name of Tanchum, my dichtiv, what is meant when it says, V'aborei gein bomayim. This pasuk over here. What did the pasuk mean when it said, V'aborei, the bor is empty, there is no water in it? Mimash v'shenemar. From the fact that it says the habor reik, the bor is empty. Don't I know that it doesn't have water? The words ein bo mayim are superfluous. They are unnecessary. The pasuk could simply have said the habor reik, and then obviously I would know ein bo mayim. There's no water in it. Ein yodea. If it said the habor reik, the bor is empty. Don't I know she ein bo mayim that there is no water in it? Ella, Martam Lama, Ein Bo Mayim, what do we learn by these three words? Ein Bo Mayim, there's no water in it? Mayim Ein Bo. It's only water that it doesn't have in it. But you know what it does have in it? Nechashim Vakrabim. There are snakes and scorpions that are scurrying around the bottom of that pit. So, of course, there is a great deal of literature on, is there any relationship between these two statements in the Gemara? Are they two unrelated statements, except for the fact that they were said by the same person? Or maybe there is a connection between the two? All right? So here begins tremendous amount of literature. It will just see me. I just gave you a number three. I gave you the Rashi, which is the summation of the Gemara. V'habor reik ein bo mayim. Mimash v'shalema v'habor reik. Now you know exactly where Rashi got it from. He got it from the Gemara in Shabbos. Well, the fact that it says v'habor reik, don't I know? Ein bo mayim. Ma talmud lomar ein bo mayim. Mayim ein bo v'lechoshim ha'kadam v'neshbo. Rashi quotes the last two lines there in the Gemara. So one approach, of course, is very, very beautiful, simple, to the point, and we'll try and make our way through it. It's number four. It's the Torah Tamima. I'll read quickly through it. The Torah Tamima says the following. Tzarech Lomar, we have to say, it's on the left-hand side of the first page. Wait a minute. It's in Rashi. It's Rashi script. Well, just follow that. I'm going to take care of you. Ba'borei, ain't no mind. Talmud, the Torah Tamim Lachomi says about Tzarech Lomar, we have to say, obviously he says, we have to say that Reuven, who cast him into the pit, didn't know that there were Nechoshim Ba'akravim. He didn't know that there were snakes and scorpions. Because if you throw somebody into a pit of snakes and scorpions, you have to assume he's going to die there. If the snakes won't do it, the scorpions certainly will.
Why didn't he think there was water in it?
What?
Why didn't he think there might be water in it?
Well, that will all be answered in one... and of course, water, you can take a peek. You can take a peek and maybe you can tell if there's water or not. But all right, watch, it won't be answered. We have to say that Reuven and his brothers didn't know that there were snakes and scorpions. Because his intent was to save Yosef and bring him back to his father. So putting him into the last place in the world you're going to save him is putting him into a pit of snakes and scorpions. V'gam echav lo yehoyu yodim. His brothers didn't know either. V'gam echav. No. He says, if his brothers would have known that there were snakes and scorpions, and Yosef survived, they come later to take him out of the pit, and Yosef has survived, they would never have laid a hand on him. Because they would have known that he survived only as a result of a nes goli mehashemayim. Just as Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babel, was overwhelmed when Daniel comes walking out of the den of lions. Hananiah, Mishael, Valzariah come out of the burning furnace. If Yosef would have emerged alive when they take him out of that pit, they would have known Yosef MS, the Chalomotav MS, he is truth. But you know why they didn't know? Because the bore was more than 20 amot deep. And anything that's more than 20 amma away, lo shalta be'ena, the eye doesn't see. Now do you see the connection between the halacha of Chanukah and the pit into which they threw Yosef? You can't fulfill the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah if the Ner Chanukah is more than 20 cubits high. You don't see. And that's why Rav Tanchum says the next statement he makes in the Gemara is Va'aborek Engomayim Avo Mechoshim Akram Yeshro. But they didn't know because they couldn't see. So he says V'gam Echav his brothers Ilu Hayu Yodim V'ro Achakashem Nitzol Nimokam Sakanach Adayit. If his brothers would have known that there were snakes and scorpions and that he was saved from definite grave danger, in Cain's Chutog Adol Miodif, so his merit is great. But Vadai, certainly after that, they would not have dealt with him so casually and so cruelly. They would have dealt with him with great respect and aimah. Nebuchadnezzar, the great Rasha, when he saw what happened with Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, that they were saved from the Kishon Eish, he did tshuva. And he said, there's a God, yes, Elohim. The Koskin, certainly Bnei Yaakov, the sons of Yaakov, would they have seen something of this awesome nature that he survives in that way. So now here's where the Torah says, there's no wonder why they didn't know, because they couldn't see. It was more than 20 amadim. It was more than 20 amadim, and the eye doesn't see. So therefore, that's what we have to read anymore. Therefore, he says, these two statements up in the Gemara, Barav Tanchum, are not put here randomly. They are put here with intent to explain to us not only a halach of Hanukkah, but the pshat in this pasuk. Havorei engomai. All right. A little more about this pit. This pit is going to become important again at the very end of Sefer Bereishit. This is the last piece of Medrash Tanchuma, number 5, down on the right-hand side at the bottom. The last piece of the Medrash Tanchuma on Sefer Bereishit. By Yidu Achei Yosef, they're coming back. The whole family is coming back from the Levaya of Yaakov Avinu in Hebron. They're on their way back to Mitzrayim. Vayiru Achei Yosef, suppose it says that the brothers of Yosef coming back from Eretz Yisrael to Mitzrayim. And the brothers of Yosef saw Kimet Avim, that their father had died. So the Medrash says, Maro Ato Shepachadu. What did they see now that they became frightened? Because it says they saw that their father had died, and they were frightened that now Yosef is going to take revenge. Now he's going to take revenge. Ella, you know what happened? The age of Chosun, Yifunat Avim, when they came back from the burial of their father, wrote, they saw Sheholach Yosef, Levorach al Otobor, Shehishlichu Echob de Tocho. Yosef made a side trip. And they knew where he went. You know where he went? He went to the pit. He went back to the pit to which he had been cast, because he wanted to stand there and say a bracha, Baruch Atah Hashem, Elokeinu Melech Haolam, Sha'asa Li Nes Bamakom Hazeh. God made a miracle for me in this place. Upeyach Alav. And he made a bracha there. Like a person is obligated, to make a bracha on a place where a miracle was done. Baruch hamakom she'asa li nes, tamakom hazeh. Blessed is God who did this miracle to me in this place. Every so often, I have about 3 or 4 ways to get into Arnof on my way home. All of them, of course, are extremely difficult. Harnof is very difficult to get to, and when you're in it, it's difficult to get out, especially during the middle of the day. It's unbelievable, a place that 25 years ago was a barren mountain, and now to cross Campaign Sharon Street and cross Beit HaTfus, it's up. But when I come into Harnof, so there's one street that I don't usually use, and that's Nisim, and now they call it Avraham Rosenthal. And it was down toward the bottom of the seat that my wife and I were sitting, minding our own business in a car, when another car came flying down the road, and God gave us the beating of our lives. So every so often when I drive down that street, I come to that spot and I say, Baruch Hamakim, Shalomun Nes Hamakim Hazeh. We could have been, well, my wife got her bed. I was not so bad. I was just not so bad that I was able to take care of her, the blind leading the lame, or the lame leading the blind. We took care of her. Baruch Hamakim, Shalomun Nes Hamakim Hazeh. Yosef went to save his brother. So the brothers think to themselves, Oyvei, all these years later, he's thinking about that pit. He hasn't forgotten what we did there. The king Shero, Kafka, they saw this. They said, Ashraf Shemei Zodimu, now that our father died, Luis Shemeinu Yosef, that's the passage. Maybe Yosef is going to hate us. The Hashem Yoshiv Lono with Kol HaRosh HaGmolam, Gamal Lotom, and he's going to repay us all the evil that we did there. By Yitzhak and by Yosef, then they made up a lie. and they said that your father commanded before his death that you should be good for us. Come Tom Will Yosef, so that you say to Yosef. We searched and we looked and we didn't find any place. Yaakov never told his children anything of the sort. They made it all up. And the Bo Ure'ei Kamagodol Koach Hashem, come and see how great is the power of peace. Shekos HaKadosh Baruch Hu V'Torozo Al Koach Hashem Elu HaDvarim. You know what it means? I have a feeling that Yosef is being slapped on the wrist for having done that. From his part, it was an act of great piety. You always have to be careful that your great piety doesn't affect somebody else negatively. And if I'll start telling you all the instances that I know of great piety being harmful, you know, danger, great piety, we won't get out of the class today. He went sincerely to say the bracha. He should have taken into consideration how they're going to see. Okay? So the pit is going to be important, but more than that. You know what it means? This confirms what Rav Tanchum was saying. So I know you're going to tell me, you know, the Medrash Tanchuma was written by Rav Tanchum. So obviously Rav Tanchum goes according to his shita. His shita is that there were nechoshim v'akrabim there. And if there were nechoshim v'akrabim, there were snakes and scorpions, then he was in the kind of pit that emerging from it is a great mess, and he's chayiv to say a bracha. Not everybody holds that. There are those who hold that that even doesn't have to be such a nes goling, and you can still say shosuli nes b'mokom hazeh. On a number of occasions, we quoted Rav Moshe, who seemed to say that people who were taken hostage at Entebbe and returned there should make the bracha shosuli nes b'mokom hazeh. I don't know, can you say that was a nes goling? It was the pretty closest human thing to a nes goling. But anyway, Rav Tanchum, according to him, was an Ezgoli because there were snakes and scorpions. Okay, let's next page. That is the second side of the first page. I'm going to take you on a little adventure over here. I'm going to try and do my best with it. I think it's extremely important. It's a classic piece of Rav Kook. And we're going to plod through it, but we're going to make our way through it. Essentially, the only introduction that I have to give to this is the following. There are three kinds of pits. For that matter, whatever we say about pits can be said about anything else in the world. I'll explain. There are pits that are good, that are beneficial, that are helpful, that are life-giving, but if not dealt with cautiously, they can become the cause of great tragedy. A pit with water, life-giving. You don't want yourself, you fall in, you're injured, person drowns, hey. Who knows what can happen in pits? So there, who's at fault? The one who's at fault, it's not a bad pit. It's a good pit. It's just a human being who didn't take care of something. So we don't decide that we're going to get rid of all pits with water. No, we need pits with water. A car. A car is extremely beneficial. Cars have saved millions of lives. There's only one problem with a car. A human being sits behind the wheel. The problem with human beings sitting behind the wheel is very, very serious. Extremely serious. I love Yerushalayim. I love all Jews. I'm not so sure how I love people who drive like Meshuggahim. I don't know how much. Not only that, by the way, it's not only you, people who drive. Pedestrians are out of their minds. I don't know why it may be in other communities like this, but in Arnold, the sidewalk, nobody walks on the sidewalk. Nobody walks on the sidewalk. The last week, I've been stopping my car. I don't know how many times. Habibi, yesh midracha, lomata, leben, zarafo. And especially a guy at night with a black back to see, you understand? I can't see him, I nearly get off of him. Okay. And then, of course, there's another thing. If I would want to cross the street now, I couldn't do it. Because I left my cell phone in my coat. You don't cross the street without a cell phone that you're talking on. You don't cross the street looking one way or the other. No, you just cross the street. There are people who have tremendous faith in God that he has nothing better to do in the whole world except watch you with children crossing the street without one. So there are pits. There are pits with water. They are life-giving, but man has to be careful. There's a pit without water. A pit without water has the potential to be good, because you know you can direct water into the pit.
You can
do all sorts of things with the pit, but man has to be careful. There's a third kind of pit, and this third kind of pit is the pits. The third kind of pit is the one that has nechashim v'akrabim, snakes and scorpions. A pit of snakes and scorpions is one that you have to get away from. Nobody can survive there, unless, of course, with great miracles. Now, I'm not going to tell you yet what Rav Kook is going to do with this, but let's go. We're going to read through it. We're going to skip a little bit. Just follow me. How do I always say? Help the finger, hold your finger on top. Kvar higiru chachomim, shekol ma she'ido liyosef, ino litzion. This is very important. Until I have the whole Medrash Tanchuma there. Medrash Tanchuma gives about 20, 25 different examples of whatever happened to Yosef, happened to Tzion. Yosef represents Tzion. Did I have any of them? I'll never finish it. Don't almighty. Number 8. Okay, don't look. We're going to lose ourselves. Yosef is symbolic of Tzion, the Jewish people. Bo-re-ei. Number 6. Stay with me. Bo-re-ei. Rav Kook says, come and see Kol Tzoro Shiro LeYosef. Whatever happened to Yosef, Ido LeTzion happened to Tzion. Al Kein, therefore, Bo-rosh Yosef Eino Yatzeg Et Yosef Uvad. Yosef's pit does not represent him, personal, individual Yosef alone, Ella, whom Yatzeg Et Klal Yisroel Kulam. It represents, and it's the story of all the Jewish people. Kemoshim Otsina, what you find, Shem Yisrael, Nikro Shem Yosef, Yisrael is called by the name Yosef, Nohi Katzom Yosef. Now therefore, in Yosef Kam Yatzeg Et Klal Yisroel, if Yosef here represents all of Israel, Lo Muflag Lomar, it's not too far out to say, Shabor Mesamel Et Hagalut. The boar represents Galut, because the boar is a place that is confining, that doesn't leave one room to move. One's actions are limited in scope. Makom Mubal, a place that's limited, Umachir V'Lam Yisrael, and a place that is painful for the Jewish people. She'eino Asher Lo Lif'ol B'Tibiyut Lo Mitzarim. The board does not permit man or the Jew to act naturally without bounds around him. V'Abor Hazeh, this pit, the Torah tells us, So for shame of mine, it's a pit without water, basalt. And the point of the Torah telling us that it doesn't have water, to remove the thought from many Jews, despite the fact that we have all seen how Jews have suffered in all of the nations of our diaspora 2,000 years. You know what occurred to many Jews? The following idea. Shaharaot halal. Bad things that happened to us. And none know what we teva hagalut. They don't flow from the nature of galus. It's not the galus that's the problem. You know what's the problem? We're the problem. Watch this. And try and think. Is Rav Kook describing what women? December 2011. There are those who had thought that it's not from the nature of the goals. It's the result of the fact that our conduct is a little bull strange. If we'd be nicer, if we'd conduct ourselves properly, if we would be mentioned, if we would deal with the Palestinians with a far greater compassion, if we would throw down 1,000 machazim, and therefore Shahivat Ne'agut, Shahivat is the conduct of the Jewish people in exile, that's what brought upon us in us Israel. Didn't a Jewish son of a Holocaust survivor, the ambassador to Belgium, say precisely that? That if we would conduct ourselves better, if we would be more compassionate, they hate us because we don't know how to act. That was a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago. Right? Bistaklut kazu ala galut. Anybody who looks at the Golas that way, that all the sorrows that we suffered is because, we should not have poisoned the wells. We just should not have poisoned the wells. Anybody who looks at Golas that way, they may live with the illusion, if Israel would be smart, to change their situation. We have to so openly act like Jews. They have to see us like Jews. They have to see us. And wherever you want, you go ahead and make yourself a million. You put on 1,000 tefillin in there. Who knows what you're doing over here? And I'm not talking about those people that go with their sidewalks and their black coats and all the rest. So they're going to make the mistake of thinking that if we change our situation, you know what'll happen? Baofen kazeh, in such a way that our conduct should be accepted by our neighbors, we would be beloved by the nations. They would all love us. That goes atzmah and the exile itself. Teyhofeich lehem le'eretz chenda. The goes would turn into the promised land. Shebo yimtzu et hamiluchah she'ibachu. That's where they're going to find that which they seek. Of course, it's only our conduct that brings all the sinas to Israel. What did that Goyin, the American Secretary of Defense, just get to the table? Just get to the table. Shom Shamayim, Shaiti Shabaylam. These are the people that run the United States of America. Shaiti Shabaylam. Only an act nicely, understand. These people, Rav Kook calls Tzom Ovdot, lost sheep. They see the galut as a bore that has water, which means it's something from which, watch the metaphor, the galut is a good place. It's a bore, it's a pit with water. life-giving fresh. The only thing is, what happens if somebody doesn't watch himself and he falls into the blood? So whose fault is it? It's his fault. No, this is great. You Jews are in trouble over here? We Jews are in trouble over here. It's all our fault. We don't know how to conduct ourselves. We don't know how to get along with people. You understand? Okay? That's one possibility. And then the next place where it's on the line. Kachshim, Gedai Yisrael, in hope is that he goes to visit who know how to conduct themselves carefully. Ubitachashvut in Sivato Agalutit, and we can take him into consideration the Galut neighborhood in which we live. It's not only that the Galut won't cause any harm. Elaon Tavo Mehakamut Toela, the Galut is going to bring us great benefit. The Israel Yisrael Yishov Mitocho Mayim Kayim Vilishbor Mimeno Tzimano, that the Jewish people will be able to drink and slake their thirst. It's a great place. It's a great place. So the Rav Kook wants to tell us, big mistake. Let's go to the next paragraph. Mishloshet sugei avorot hanal. He wants to tell us, what's the galus? Which bor is it? Which pit? He says, you know what the galus is? It's the bor of nechoshim v'akrabim. The galus is the pit of snakes and scorpions. What does it mean? Watch. She'ein ha'adam yochal lomer aleh, a person cannot say about it. Po eshev ki yivtir. You can't say about it. This is where I'm going to sit and this is where I'm going to live. I was at a wedding. Was it last night? 2 nights ago. I'm talking with a very fine yeshiva person, but that's not because yeshiva can be anybody. Sorry, I can't help it, you know, I got it from my wife. I mean, somebody doesn't live over here, so I asked him, like, do you plan on living here? Plan on living here? Oh, no, I don't plan on living here. Sorry. You know that I'm very peaceful and very calm, and very reserved and very introverted. I said, but it's a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah, so I say, it's a positive commandment from Torah. You're not telling me that you don't want to fulfill a mitzvah. No, I can't live it. No, I don't want to live it. No, I like it better then. I told you, Didiyakan, you're a Ben Teira. You have to work on yourself. If you respond in this way, that means you're missing one of the most important and fundamental principles of Torah. One of the important principles of Torah is its Ritzon Hashem, it's God's will that all of His people should live in His land. You should say, I look forward to the day in Yetz Hashem that I will want to live here and I will live here. But you can't walk off and say, no, I don't want it. That's a rejection of a Lubeishon, the Terosi. He's doodled out of there. You know what? Talking to me, he must have thought that he was in a pit with snakes and scorpions. Rav Kook is going to define the galus as a pit of snakes and scorpions. What's the difference between snakes and scorpions? Right? I went ahead and I googled scorpions. Your hair will stand up on edge when you find out that there are over 2,000 forms of scorpions. They even have pictures over there, so the Irish dog. Many of them are absolutely deadly to human beings. Snakes and scorpions. A snake, when he bites, it's with intent. He wants to bite. In a sense, it harkens back to the fact that if the Adam and Chava ate from the Eitz HaDaat because they had been incited by the snake, God said, Eva or Shita, I'm going to make hatred between you and the and man. But you know what happens in the physiognomy or whatever it is of the snake after he vents his venom? He's weakened. It's going to take him a while until he's able to do it again. The scorpion, no intent whatsoever to harm. He may be the most gentle scorpion in the world. It's built into him that he bites, he pricks, can't help it, it's involuntary. So the Chosef said like this, of course, that during the years and those, there were those who intent went out to destroy the Jewish people, either physically or spiritually. It was done with predetermined intent. But that's not the only way in which the Golus acts on us. The Golus also acts on us in another way. The Metzius, the essence, the reality of the Golus is destructive as well. Proof? If I need any more proof, I bring my proof whither I go. Jerusalem Post, December 4th. I don't even know what daf it is, or it's a thumb. In an effort to lure Israelis home, Aliyah adds offend American Jews. This great issue of the Aliyah ads, and that segment of an ad where an Israeli family with their little daughter are Skyping to the grandparents someplace in Eretz Yisrael, and sort of the question is like, what holiday is this? And the little girl says, the little Israeli girl with grandparents in the Holy Land, Christmas.
Yo.
Yo. The point of the ads was excellent. The point of the ads is exactly what Rav Kook says. There is something about the Golus that is going to impact, especially on Israelis who leave without any connection to religion. So it's only their Israelihood that's lost in one generation. The second generation is finished. Do I need more value of the famous editorial in the Jerusalem Post? A gewalder. One ad shows a pair of Israeli grandparents seated before Chanukiah and Skyping with their granddaughter who lives in America. The grandparents' faces are transfixed with sorrow when their precious granddaughter refers to the holiday being celebrated in Israel as Christmas. Yet the sad fact is that for Israelis, in particular second generation Israelis born in America, rates of assimilation are worryingly high. And it's not because anybody's gone out after them. There are no mechashim out after them. There's the natural akram. They're living in a goyishist society and they have nothing to sustain themselves. They have nothing to hold on to. They don't have Torah, they don't have mitzvahs, they don't have a God, they don't have a Shabbos, they don't have a tefillin, they don't have sisters, they don't have anything. One reason for this high rate, and there's a lot of assimilation. These second generation Israelis tend to define themselves as Americans and do not identify with American Jewry or with Israelis. Or with Israelis. Finished. I mean, I hope Israelis understand what's happening over here. That what they are transmitting to their children has a one generation shelf life. That's all. You can give a stamp on an Israeli, good, until such and such year. After that, it's all over. Shelf life, very, very limited. We're talking about a people that has had a shelf life 4,000 years. unmatched by any other in the world. But Israeli shelf life is no more than one generation, and with a nest, the second generation, unless they remain here. If they remain here, so first of all, there just aren't enough shiksas to go around. Can't be much intermarriage. I remember I had a fellow in West Hempstead. That fellow in West Hempstead used to tell me, now, you know, there's one yontif American Jews don't know about. They just don't know of this yontif. Shmuas. Very few non-religious Jews in America know about Shmuas. Shmuas, what are you talking about? There's no matzahs, there's no sukkah, there's no nothing. Nothing, Shabbat, nothing. Just favorite. A Jewish kid living in Israel knows about Shabbos. The whole atmosphere over here is, even if they're Chiloni, the whole atmosphere is Shabbos to Shabbos. We all know about Shabbos. Everybody knows about Pesach, Shabbos to Sukkot. They're living in the Jewish life cycle. You put them out there, they find themselves in a pit of snakes and scorpions. Right? The Hitler Jerusalem Post goes on to say, unfortunately, even among U.S. Jews who have developed a multitude of creative ways of maintaining Jewish continuity in a super liberal, multicultural environment, have nevertheless been assimilating at high rates for some time now. Israel is, after all, the only place where the Jewish population is actually growing. It is not growing in the United States of America. It stopped growing a long, long time ago. There's a great deal more over here. I want to go one step further. When Rav Kook defines the Golus as a bore of Nechashim Bakavim, that's not only for Israelis who are Yordim. This is a message that has to get across to everybody. Make no mistake. Even within the religious community. There's no question about it, that there's an effect, there's an impact. It can't be otherwise. We're small Jews. I don't know how old the Yiddish expression is, wir Christen sich, Yidl sich. That was clearly making a statement that as things go in the Christian world, that's the way it's going to go in the Jewish world, and it's going to impact in some way. And very often you can't even figure out what way it impacts. They don't have a clue. I'm going to take one more minute from Dr. Goldblum to learn with you. Turn over to number 7. Second page. Number 7. Can't finish this share without number 7. Pasuk in Eicha. Goals of Yehuda, the only Yehuda went into exile out of poverty, Umeirov Avodah, from heavy work. He, Yoshba Bagoyim, she lived amongst the nations of the world out of the exile. Lo Mas'om Manoach, she did not find peace. Kol Rotzeha, Hisigua, Bein HaMetzorim. All of her pursuers found her Bein HaMetzorim. The Gemara on this says, he, Yoshua Bagoyim, she lived amongst the nations below Mosul and Iraq and didn't find peace. Hoi, Mosul and Iraq. But if she would have found peace over there, she'd never come back. Never come back. In a sense, Chazal is saying, the blessing of the Golos is Lo Mosul and Iraq. Didn't find peace, says the Holy Torah to me. This is the pshat. He Yoshva Bagoyim, she lived and settled amongst the nations, as in Parashat Vayeshev. Vayeshev, Yaakov, Bikesh Yaakov Leishev B'Shalva. Yaakov wanted to live in peace. Then comes the story of Yosef. Joshua, when the Pasuk says Joshua Bagoyim, she wanted to live amongst the nations. She didn't want to think of coming back. That's what she wanted. She didn't succeed. She thought that she would find, the Jewish people would find peace out there. They didn't. And because they didn't find peace, then they always, in moments of great crisis, they looked eastward. They looked towards Israel. Watch what he says. This drosha is so precious. With the clear hashkafa that it expresses, the hey de kolah, and the echo of the voice of this statement, Yishama b'chol dor v'dor, av hayom hazeh, can be heard in every generation until this day. Yekara hi ad ma'od, how precious it is. We didn't find peace amongst the nations of the world. We'll never find peace amongst the nations of the world. You want to disagree with me?
No, not at all. All I'm saying is that this has been going for 2,000 years because there are no places. And I came from
I'm talking about today. I said I was talking about December of 2011. December 2011. I was not talking about September of 1939. Getting Hanukkah, everybody, and we'll wish you a getting Hanukkah next Tuesday, Yitz Hashem Gesundheit as well.
Yes, we
do.